Hi, friends, and welcome to the By Faith Podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on By Faith, we're talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry. Before we jump into today's episode, I want to quickly tell you that in the next few weeks, I'm going to be doing some live Q&As on Instagram related to different aspects of ministry. Tomorrow, February 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern, I'll be answering questions related to raising kids in a pastor's home. I recently released an early chapter for my forthcoming book, How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife, on seasons of ministry with small children. That's what my Instagram followers voted to read early. So now let's discuss it. Come find me on Instagram at ChristineHoover98, and you can read the chapter if you haven't yet, and let me know what questions you have about raising kids in the ministry. And then plan to join me at 2 p.m. Eastern for an hour-long discussion. I can't wait to see you there. I'll be doing more of these in the coming weeks, and some of them will involve other pastors' wives and my husband, Kyle. So if you have ministry questions not related to raising PKs, go ahead and send those my way as well. Okay, friends, let's get to today's episode. I am very excited to share it with you because my guests are Ben and Lindley Mandrell. Ben is the president of Lifeway, but before that, he and Lindley planted a church in Colorado. And then before that, they served at an established church. In other words, they know what it's like to be a pastor and a pastor's wife, and they know what it's like to not be a pastor and a pastor's wife. And so because they are no longer in that position, I asked them to come on and to talk about what they would do differently looking back and what they would do all over again, what they want people in the pews to understand about pastors and pastor's wives, and what they want pastors and pastors' wives to understand about people in the pews. As you can imagine, this is a very insightful conversation. You're going to learn a lot from them. You're going to be challenged. And you're also going to find out pretty quickly that they are very honest and authentic about the struggles and joys of pastoral ministry. So here, friends, is my conversation with Ben and Lindley Mandrell. I'm really excited to welcome today Ben and Lindley Mandrell to the podcast. Welcome, Mandrells.
All right. Hey, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, we're excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you. I've enjoyed getting to talk to you and get to know you a little bit when my husband and I were on y'all's podcast, The Glass House. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that some at the end because it's a phenomenal podcast for pastors and pastors' wives. So how about y'all just start by introducing yourselves and your ministry context, your family, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. We'll do this fast. Ben and Lindley Mandrell, we have four teenagers. We love golden retrievers and photograph them often.
We were laughing the other day because I said, we've transitioned to where I think we take more pictures of our dogs than our children because teenagers were like, don't take a picture.
Yes. Yeah.
So we take pictures of the dogs who can't talk back.
How many dogs do you have?
I mean, just two.
Okay.
It's not ridiculous.
They're awesome.
Yes, but we do love them. Yes.
We have a firstborn that's looking for a college, and that is a massive part of our lives right now.
I think we underestimated the amount of unknowns that come with the senior year.
Yes.
You know, I didn't have any clue. I figured she'd pick a college really early on because she's a decisive person, but, it's not been so easy for her. So we're still waiting that out.
And it's so weird when you're in the spring semester and you're going, where is my child going to be living in 6 months? You don't know.
Right. Yeah. And who is her roommate? And are all these people figuring this out while we're still waiting to decide where she's going? And
yes.
So it's just a lot of unknowns and it's hard. And she gets asked about 18 times a week, you know, where are you going? And, you know, she knows where she wants to go. It just depends on whether she gets in. So we're just waiting on that letter.
Wow.
And my emotions have totally snuck up on me on this. I was always the dad that was just like, get them out the door, release them, let the arrows fly. And I'm like sad. I'm like really sad about her leaving and having all boys in the house and, Lindley, but it's going to be a game changer for us. But anyway, one of the ways that we cope with stress is through chocolate. Lindley steals my son's Reese's Christmas tree chocolates all the time.
For Christmas, we draw names and just within the six of us. And I gave Miles this 32 pack of Reese's Christmas trees
from Sam's
because that's what he wanted.
Oh my goodness.
But he doesn't know it. And he has them all lined up pretty in his room. And I just kind of keep taking one from the bottom. So he doesn't know it.
So you really give yourself a Christmas present.
That's right. Basically, yes.
That's right. I mean, and she justifies it. She's like, she'll come down with one in her hand. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I gave him a gift card the other day or something else. So I'm taking some trees.
I bought him a pair of jeans. So why not?
That's awesome. Anyway. Okay. Well, anyway. So where are y'all serving? Tell us about that.
We are at Lifeway. I am the president of Lifeway. Prior to this, we pastored two churches, one a large established church in West Tennessee, the other one a church plant in Denver, Colorado. Both adventures with stories to be told. But now we're at Lifeway, 2.5 years in, leading the company through one of the most radical seasons of transformation. So change is the name of the game right now for us in family and job, everything.
Yeah, that's true. And Lindley, you're pretty involved with what he's doing. Yeah, tell us about that.
So, I mean, it's been just a transition of figuring out what to do from being a pastor's wife for 17 years to a business ministry's wife. And I mean, The Glass House, our podcast, has been such a fun project to do together. But besides that, I mean, I'm really trying to help him with events that come out of the president's office, because I mean, probably like you and Kyle, we know how each other works after, you know, being married for 20 years. And Ben and I both have some quirks. And so it's helpful for me to be able to help people who work with him understand how he works. You know what I mean? And so it's fun for me to do events out of the president's office, because I know that he's going to wake up one morning and say, I've got this great idea. And I need to be able to help him implement those to his staff, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's
ideas.
That's kind of what y'all were doing. Even in your previous church plant, you were on staff, right, Lindley?
So I was, I was the director of kids ministry at Storyline. And so really, really enjoyed that. Had no idea that that was going to be my role there when we began the church plant, but it just kind of transitioned and blossomed into that. Towards the end, I was working more with leadership development of volunteers and stuff. And so I really, really enjoyed that as well. So,
well, let's cut to the chase for the sake of the listeners. And that is, we were not prepared emotionally to make this transition.
Well, let's talk about that.
Well, I want to know. Going right there.
I mean, let's just get there.
I want to hear about that transition, because it seems like from things that you've shared on your podcast that you have learned a ton about yourself, that you've kind of almost come awake to some things about yourselves, about you as a couple. So I'd love to hear about that transition, what you're learning.
Sure.
Episode 1 of The Glass House, we tell our story, which was, we came off the treadmill of every Sunday is coming pastoral ministry, which is an episode in and of itself. And when we came to Lifeway, where every Sunday wasn't coming and we weren't in public view every weekend, we had this amazing freedom to actually look within our marriage and with ourselves and say, okay, there's some things that we've been shoving under the rug for over a decade. Let's deal with them. And a lot of those had to do with identity. A lot of those had to do with need for approval or praise. We just entered into a journey of counseling that has been transformational for us. What would you add to that?
Well, I would add to that, that I don't think that we were not looking for that. And we didn't move here even understanding that we were unhealthy. I mean, I think so for us, COVID is what did it for us, of realizing how unhealthy we were, just because, you know, when you first move and things are exciting. And so, you know, Ben was excited. He was in the office. COVID hadn't happened yet. So he was walking the halls and high-fiving people. And it was just a big fun time. And then I was home, and really for a few months, I really enjoyed being off the treadmill. I mean, Storyline was growing so quickly that it was just all consuming. And so I really hadn't had time to breathe. I mean, my body felt physically tired. So I just enjoyed that. Well, then things started to kind of creep in of discontentment between he and I in the marriage, and feeling like I had felt a little bit duped, like we moved here to do this together, and then I just wasn't a part of it. And that was really hard after 17 years. And then COVID hit. And what we realized then is that we were so addicted to the praise of men. And so what happens is that you're not around people anymore. You're not preaching anymore. Not me. I'm not preaching, but Ben's not preaching anymore. And there's no flood of affirmation. And so then you're left with wondering, okay, well, who are we then? Like, who are we? What is our identity? Were we reliant on the Lord all along? And so this whole process, we began this counseling process for a year, and it's still happening. We have backed off from weekly, but you know, we need a weekly counseling for a year of just understanding our depravity, really.
We believe that one of the hardest things in the world is to be a healthy pastor. The only thing harder is to be a healthy pastor's wife. I mean, really, truly down to my gut, believe that. I think as you're tending to sheep every day in the flock and you're tending to everyone else's problems, the easiest gravity to hold is let's just focus on everybody else and our stuff we'll get to later.
Yes.
And as we've opened up the door of Pandora's box and this glass house thing, more and more pastors and pastors are reaching out saying, this is us. We are really struggling with all these emotional things. And thank you for like talking about it because we don't know how to talk about it.
Yes. Yes. And you spent the whole season or I don't know if y'all are doing seasons anymore, but many episodes talking about emotional health, which I think is so underdeveloped in many pastors and pastors' wives for the very reasons you just said. Mm-hmm. So are you saying that you were performing? Do you think there was a performance thing to it that you no longer could do? And so it challenged you to think about who you are apart from that?
I think there's an outward perception and an inward reality that we deal with in ministry. And it's much easier to be a whitewashed tomb, as Jesus said, looking beautiful on the outside, but dead bones on the inside. And we realized when we got to Lifeway, and this was not Lifeway's fault, this wasn't anybody's fault but our own, that there were a lot of things that had kind of stored up within each of us through 17 years of pastoring that needed to come out to be redeemed. And we're still working through all that, maybe probably for the rest of our life, according to our counselor.
Mm-hmm. So as
I keep saying, so like to our counselor, like, hey, so when's this finished? Are we almost done? Are we there yet?
When do I get to check that box?
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, can you just tell me how to fix this and then we can be done?
Exactly. That's how my husband would be.
Session one, I told him, I was like, hey, can you give us some homework so we can kind of speed this up? And he was like, yeah, I don't really do homework. It's going to take time.
And now he knows where to focus his attention on Ben Vandrell, right?
Yeah, yes. I get some time.
So unfortunately, you can't go back into pastoral ministry and practice some of the things that you are learning. But I'm sure there are things, and I know you can implement it where you are now, but are there things that you look back now on as a pastor and pastor's wife that you would immediately do differently?
First of all, I think it's really fun to be able to speak to what it's like to be in pastoral ministry now that we're not in it. Because when you're in it and you say these things, you sound like a whiner. But now,
or your church feels offended because they, right. You know, people in them begin to wonder, well, are they talking about me?
Exactly.
Or other things. And so for us to be able to just say, hey, we're speaking objectively here. This is just our experience. But I interrupted Ben, but I'm going to keep talking since I did. You know, one thing that we...
I had a good point.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead then.
Well, I was saying, like, what people don't realize they're not in ministry is that the relentless waves of the sea of ministry are always rolling in. Like Sunday. And very few other jobs operate that way. There are other vocations that operate that way. But when you're always getting ready for the next inspirational moment and gathering of the church, it starts to create this, like your battery never gets fully charged. So we've talked a lot about this. Like we didn't realize how exhausting it really is until we got out of it and could see it from a distance.
Can I go then?
Now you can.
Okay.
I had to get that out.
You know, I think things that we talked about doing differently is that we would begin seeing a counselor from the very beginning. If we were church planting now, we would start from the very beginning. And I know you and Kyle experienced just the stress of church planting. And I feel bad. I always go to church planting as if being in an established church is not difficult. They're both very difficult. They have different, you know, different challenges. But I think we would start it beforehand because things happened, you know, with our launch team. Things happened emotionally with other people that we just thought we should have had some help with that. And I think too, we were asked to do a lot of counseling and we look back on that and regret it because we really should have sent people to counselors. You know, they go to school to be a counselor. Preachers, pastors probably have a course or two in seminary, but they're not counselors. And I look back and I think some people asked us to help with their situations and we should have met with them and prayed with them and then sent them on to somebody who really knew how to help it. So, I mean, I think that's some advice. If we went back into the church, we would say, you know, we want to pray for you. We want to care for you. But someone who is educated in this field needs to really take over your care.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point.
Do you have compassion for yourselves more now, looking back at what you were doing and enduring? Is there a sense of compassion that you feel toward yourselves?
Can you describe what that is?
We're low on compassion.
I don't really understand how to be compassionate to myself. Help me understand.
What does that mean?
Are you hard on yourself then?
Both of you? Goodness. We are the worst two people on the planet about this.
Oh, goodness.
Actually, I'm not. I'm hard on him. And he's hard on himself. So, I mean, that's hard for
us
together.
But I would say, yeah, looking back now on the church planning thing especially, there was so much coming at us. Like, it was like a game of asteroids, like meteors flying at us constantly, whether it's school not wanting us to come in, teachers changing the game on us every Sunday, you know, people deciding whether they want to be in the church or out of the church, you know, challenges of our own family and our own things going on. Like, looking back now, I'm realizing more and more just what a big mess it was. And we did a fairly good job of monitoring all that madness. But to her point, it would have been really helpful weekly to sit down with somebody and talk that out.
Yeah. Yes. What about, what would you do? And I'm asking these questions just for listeners who are not on the outside, they're in the middle of it. And you have this perspective now on things. What would you do differently in your marriage?
Man, that's a good question. We have talked about this before. I think we would have had, you know, we talk about this and it sounds so silly, but hobbies and more fun. You know, when you are on a staff together, and even really separate, I mean, our personalities are just all consuming. And so whatever we're into at the moment is all consuming. And so we didn't take enough breaks of just, let's go, you know, stop and smell the roses kind of thing. And we'd go on walks all the time. And during those walks, we would talk about, you know, how we could do something more efficiently or purposeful. And so, I mean, I wish I had some really great advice, but really we just would have, for me, slowed down a little bit, gone and, you know, played tennis, played golf, done something that just took our minds off of it. Because what happens when, for us, when it's all consuming is that we begin to believe that we are the reason it's successful.
Yes.
And so, you know, the more we talk about it and the more success it grows, then it's this, you know, vicious cycle of, well, we're doing it. And so we need to keep it up. And, you know, God leaves the equation of what he's actually doing for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's all summed up with the statement, just taking ourselves less seriously. I think we need to take our ministries a little less seriously. They're going to outlive us. Jesus isn't the one in control of those ministries. It's just really hard in the midst of ministry to step back from it and see it in a healthy way rather than, it, you know, it's me. I am what I do. Mm-hmm. I think everybody in some way struggles with that, who works, and whether it's working at home or working in vocation, to separate yourself in a healthy way.
I think one thing that we've learned after leaving two churches is how easily we're replaceable. And I don't mean that in a pity party way. I just think, you know, sometimes I think people get carried away with, you know, in jobs, and we've seen this even in his current situation, is, you know, people leave and there are other people who can come in and replace them, and they do a good job. And so, you know, we leave and we felt like, man, you know, what's the church going to do without us? Well, they're going to find another pastor and they're going to do great. You know, I mean, it is the way the world works. And so I do think that's why we talk about not taking ourselves so seriously, because we really aren't the, you know, the linchpin that's holding everything together. I mean, the Lord is doing that and we're his vessel. And so, you know, he can give and take away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're speaking a lot about identity. And I, like you said, Ben, it's hard when you're in it to not let that be all consuming. But can you speak to us about what are some of the truths now that you want to highlight for other pastors and pastors' wives about God, what he's doing, their identity? You know, what are you hammering home as you're speaking to these other pastors?
We had an episode with Rich Velotis yesterday, who wrote a book called The Deeply Formed Life. And I'm still thinking about it because he used the verse from Colossians 1:17 about, oh, in him, all things are held together, speaking of Christ. And he said that the reason people burn out is they start to believe that they are the ones holding it all together. So I think if there's one message of the Glass House, it's to get healthy around that, that you are not the one holding it all together. You can take some Sundays off. It's not going to fall apart. It may be even great for you to take a month off and get your charge back on your batteries and start loving people again. If pastors aren't loving people like naturally and from the heart, that's a significant issue they need to look at. And so I did not do this well. I regret it big time. I preached 48 out of 52 Sundays a year for 17 years. Even then, when I was gone, I was worried about what was going on in the pulpit or what was going on in the church and were the volunteers happy. And Lindley and just talk about this. Like, it's actually really hard to take a Sunday off in ministry because you worry about it.
Yeah.
Is it going to fall apart? And then volunteers are texting you like, hey, what's going on this morning? Like, hey, we're on vacation.
Yeah.
It's hard to check out, but we would have done that more intentionally. And I think it would have been good for the church to see that we were doing that.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Lindley? Because you've kind of alluded to this wrestling struggle to figure out this new place and new ministry opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my identity crisis has been in where I feel value. Like, I mean, in my value. And for some reason, I have this hang up of being a stay-at-home mom as finding my value in that. I don't know why. I know that's not the right thing to say here on your air, but it just is a thing for me. And there's something in my spirit that I wrestle with that I want to be more. And mm-hmm. I don't even know what that means, because I can't find a greater joy than to think I raised four teenagers who go into the world and love the Lord and serve and have relationships with unchurched people and, you know, spread the gospel. Like, I can't imagine anything more successful, but I still really struggle with it. And so I think I had this identity apart from Ben at Storyline of like, well, I'm doing a good job and I'm the director of this thing and it's growing. And so when I come here and I'm left to being a stay-at-home mom, and people ask you all the time, well, you know, what do you do? Well, I'm a stay-at-home mom. They look at you kind of funny, like, oh, okay, well, that's great. There's no harder job. You know, like they kind of yeah. come up with these things and, you know, and then there's these signs about it, all this stuff. And you're like, okay, well, I know that. Like, I know it in my head, but I can't get it into my heart. And so I think the Lord has led me in this place for so long to find contentment in knowing if that is all he has for me, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a great thing to just, you know, to raise children, to love them. And had we stayed at Storyline, I would not have the relationship with my children that I have now. I'm really close with them all because I've had to put down this constant job, you know, that I was really just kind of shoving them out the door to play because I needed to work. Mommy needed to work. And so there's blessings in it, but that is my identity crisis, really, mm-hmm. is being, you know, my work needs to be celebrated publicly versus celebrated within the home.
Yeah, I can relate to what you're saying. And I think a big drive for me, or a concern or something that is vulnerable to me, is not being seen. And I think that a lot of pastors' wives feel that way, that they're in the shadow of their husband, even if they have their own call to ministry or their own drive to do things, it still kind of comes under the shadow or behind him.
Yes.
So do you relate to that at all? Is that something?
Oh, yes, I definitely do. I mean, that is a hard part of my personality, is I want to be beside him. I want to be, you know, in the know and not nosy. I'm a very like quiet, you know, I'm not a busybody, but I want to be beside him and I want to be changing the kingdom right there with him. And so, you know, we did an interview and the lady had said she has for 30 something years felt like the invisible woman. Mm-hmm. And she said, not because I haven't had roles, but because when big decisions come along, sometimes it's like the men get together and kind of say, well, we need to talk about this, you know, and kind of push them aside. Like, you know, so that's been a challenge for me. Ben, you can speak maybe more articulately for me here.
I carry a certain level of sadness around this subject, because have you ever seen the movie Family Man with Nicolas Cage?
I don't think so.
Well, it's this incredible story about how this guy sees what his life would have been like had he made different decisions.
Mm.
And one of the things that it shows is like, if he hadn't married his wife at when they did and they had kids, she would have turned out to be this power career woman. And he gets to see that. And I carry that a little bit with Lindley, because I feel like we got married really young. She followed me into my first pastorate. She didn't really have a chance to develop her own career. She was forced into supporting me
which was dental hygiene, by the way. So there's not a lot of career advancement in dental hygiene.
But let me just say this. If one of us has our act together, it's her. I mean, really. And I feel like it's unfair sometimes that I get so much attention or praise or approval because I'm a public figure, when really the magic happens because Lindley's pulling it all together. And I think that story has multiplied a lot with pastors' wives, that she's really the one like making it happen, but he gets all the praise, and resentment is just always knocking on the door.
So how have you dealt with that resentment, Lindley? Do you have that? Or
I don't have that resentment. I mean, I think that, you know, as we've talked about it in our counseling, that's a piece of shame in his story that I don't carry towards him.
Okay.
And I, you know, I see the way God has gifted Ben differently than me, and his charisma, and people like Ben, and you know, I wish I had that. I don't, I mean, people like me, but you know, I mean, he's really fun and lights up a room when he walks in, and I'm more reserved and stay behind. And so I don't have resentment for him in the success that he has had. So that has not been my deal. I mean, it's just my self-talk, like self-sabotage of I need to be as important as him, you know, or I feel less intelligent because, again, my gift set is so different than him that I'm not a natural intellect. And so I get intimidated with myself in regards to, well, I'm standing beside him and we're meeting with other, you know, seminary presidents, and they're going to ask me my theology on something, and I'm going to not have a good answer there because that's not, I'm not as intellectual as Ben. In book smarts type things. So I really don't have any resentment towards Ben. It's my own, you know, I think we half the time our problems are within our own minds.
Yeah. And we've talked a lot about what you would do differently, but surely there are things that you look back on and you think, I'm so glad we did that. I'm so glad we did this way for our marriage, our family, our church. What are some of the things that you would do all over again?
I mean, for me, I'll begin here. The leap out to the west to Colorado, I don't think that we knew how dramatically that would affect our children. And they didn't have unchurched friends when we lived in the South. I mean, they were there until they were middle elementary school ages. And so we went out there, and I mean, our children have a really great ability to have conversations with unchurched. I mean, our daughter was telling us last night, even just a conversation she was having with a friend who was Hindu, who is Hindu, and another friend who just doesn't know what she believes. And because we moved out there and because we were surrounded by this, I mean, Ben did a world religions Bible class in our basement, and all the children from the neighborhood came because the parents wanted to understand it. He taught them all kinds of things. I mean, you know, we did, goodness, what all
we went from there? religion to religion, just like hear the basic beliefs and how they contrast with Christianity. It was amazing. I learned
that's
a lot.
Great.
And just recently, one of our son Miles wrote an article. He had to write an English,
an essay,
and he wrote about this, and we didn't even know it because he's our least,
if he's had a thought in the last 10 days, we don't know about it.
Okay, got it. I have a child like that.
It's just all in his head. And, yeah. And so he wrote this essay, and Ben was editing it, and we were both just kind of blown away by it because we didn't know that's what he felt.
He wrote on paper without me helping him. I learned by moving to Colorado how to make friends with people who believe different things than me.
Wow.
That was powerful for me as a dad, because I look at all the gaps in our parenting. I think there's gains and gaps. As parents, we're always looking at the gaps. We rarely see the gains. And, you know, we look at our flimsy family devotions and things that just don't seem to pop. But what really has made an impact with our kids is stepping out in faith and doing some risky things together and then processing those. Mm-hmm. And Colorado did that for us. So that, I don't regret that at all. Mm-hmm. And I think also what we don't regret is we built a church that was, from its very inside DNA, focused on reaching the city, reaching the neighbors, reaching the community. That emphasis like continues to live as a deep burden in our heart. Even this week, like, we're just like, how do we get to know our neighbors? Like, people are just challenging to break in. And yet it's a burden that really grew and developed as we became church planters. I'm really glad it's still there, even though we're still trying to figure out how that works in our new setting with COVID.
Yeah. I mean, the reason we moved out to Colorado is because we had become so, what is your saying? We had become fishers of
We say it this way, that people start out as fishers of men, but become keepers of the aquarium.
Ooh.
We were those people in Tennessee. Going to Colorado forced us out of that mentality.
And I mean, just personal decisions that we made, they're not right or wrong, but we went from a private school in Tennessee to public school in Colorado, and we transitioned to public schools here.
That's no judgment to those.
It's not. No. Everybody has their own set of circumstances that you have to follow. But for us, we just felt like we have got to get outside of Christian circles. And how do we do that? And so that was our way of doing it. Everyone has different ways of doing it. I mean, you can join gyms, you can, you know, a biking club, all that kind of stuff. But so, I mean, I just think in the way we engage the culture out there deeply changed us. And so we have no regrets about that. And we come back here and, you know, I would rather have more unchurched friends than church friends, because I think they give you such an interesting perspective on what they believe about us. And so, you know, it's scary to me when people only want to hang out with one circle, because it becomes, you limit what you can learn from other people. And we even have a phone call set up this week to, with a neighbor, and to see if she would do a podcast on the Glass House of what unchurched people really think about, you know, pastors and pastors.
That's a great idea.
I just think it'd be so fun, because we were great friends. They'd come and visit us in Nashville. We had to go through these like different tests of theirs to see if we passed their test, and we did. And it was, you know, and it's a great relationship. And of course we pray for them all the time.
Think this Jesus church thing we do is cool. That's great. I love you guys.
Good for you. People need more morals.
Yeah.
They need a lot of morals, you know, and we're like, yes, they do. And Jesus. And they say things like, you know, you've really changed. You came onto the street and you made everyone think about their worldview. Well, that's like the greatest compliment you could give us.
That's awesome.
We have no regrets about going out there and starting a church like
that. I just think the theme of this is, if you're not occasionally stepping out of the boat and doing something that terrifies you, are you really living by faith? You know, isn't that really what Jesus taught? It's not about settling in and getting comfortable. It's like, as soon as you get settled in and comfortable, get ready. He's about to throw you into the water fully submerged.
Yeah.
And he's going to pull you up out of it. And we're learning more and more. We learned this in our step out to Colorado, that those moments are the scariest and they're also the most exciting.
Yes. We experienced the very same thing when we did it too. So speaking of perspective, you are now congregants in a church.
Congregants? I've congregants. Never used that word. Yes. We're parishioners.
parishioners, congregants. I would love for you to tell us what you are learning as you now experience church, not leading it. What are some of the things that you now see that you missed or overlooked about how people experience their leaders?
Let me qualify this in that we are now popping into dozens and dozens of churches. So the things we're about to say are not indicative of the church we're attending per se. So I didn't want anybody listening to think that. One of the things that we've noticed is how important it is to refresh the decor of your space. Oh my gosh. We have a whole podcast coming on this.
Really?
Space matters. When non-religious people walk into our spaces, like, how does it make them feel? What do they see? What are they experiencing? It's no wonder we're not reaching people in our churches. Our space looks like something they would never step in their normal lives.
Like what? So, give us an example of what you've experienced.
Well, I mean, you know, greenery that's turned turquoise because it's been there so long. there are so many things that now, I mean, this younger generation they really care about aesthetics.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so we say the church is not a building, and that's absolutely true, but people do like to go to spaces that feel updated.
They don't want it to be luxurious, fancy, like, why did you spend my tithe money on that? Not that. It just needs to be well cared for. Like, we're excited to have you. And so we cleaned up the place a little.
We were in a church recently and they had their pumpkins out still, but also some poinsettias. And I'm like, you know, it just, like, for people who are detailed oriented, you're kind of like, which holidays are we celebrating? It's just little things like that. And so that's, I mean, that's kind of where
we're that going. Sounds shallow, but the reason we're making a big deal out of that is because I think to reach the next generation, we have to recognize that they love to walk into warm spaces where it's a prepared atmosphere.
Yeah.
People love to walk into a prepared atmosphere. So one of the things we would love to consult with churches and say, hey, let's think about refreshing your space on a shoestring budget, because you can't. You really can't. But
I would say the things that we have learned is because we come at it now with names and faces of people who we had just gotten to come into Storyline. I mean, we have dozens of names of unchurched people who were just coming in, and the things that they would tell us that made them feel comfortable or uncomfortable. And so as we visited churches, what has been hard is the things that we do that we don't even realize that are really churchy, and the words we use. And, when we're in a church setting and they at the end say, you know, now get in groups of three or four and pray. Well, that's really intimidating to someone who doesn't even know if they believe in prayer. They don't know if it works. And then they're supposed to pray out loud. You know, they don't pray silently in their head, much less out loud. I think of a neighbor, my best friend, and when you walk into a place, she wants to be under the radar. Well, then when you stand for the reading of the word, which is great, it feels uncomfortable to people who are unchurched. So that's just been an interesting perspective we've had, visiting a lot of different churches.
We firmly believe that the reason many churches are not reaching unchurched people is because the pastor and his wife are not making any attempt to do so either. What changed the game for us in church planning was when our neighbors who we loved, who were not church, non-religious people, started attending. We had suddenly had skin in the game. It was like, we used to think people that were gluten-free were freaks until we now have a kid that is gluten-free. And now all of a sudden we're like, why doesn't this restaurant have gluten-free?
Well, he's celiac.
He's celiac disease. Yes. And so the poor kid, like, you feel it so much differently when it's personal.
Yeah.
So my point is, I think if, Lifeway Research just came out with this big study, 75% of pastors are frustrated that their churches are not thinking about the non-religious in their communities. Well, the part of the answer to that is that the pastor himself has to start telling stories about how burdened he is to reach his neighbors.
Mm.
There's got to be a culture where it starts at the top. Mm-hmm. You can't ask other people to do what you're not doing. So I'm getting back to your question. I'm really proud of the fact that we did that in Denver. We didn't just ask people to do what we weren't doing. That was our life.
Mm, that's great. Really helpful. I'm wondering if you've been in situations too now where I know part of your job and you mentioned earlier going to different churches a lot. And so it might be hard for you to be consistently at your church that you've chosen. Have you experienced people kind of questioning decisions or, things where you know what it's like on the other side?
Right. Right.
How have you handled that kind of thing? And maybe you haven't experienced that, but
we have experienced that. And one thing I would say is we believe that people underestimate the amount of prayer and thought and time that goes into every decision. You know, a lot of times people, because you can't share details and because you can't share true things that are happening sometimes, then the pastor has to stand up and say, well, we've had to let go of so-and-so, or we've made this decision. And people don't give you the benefit of the doubt a lot of times. And so what we've tried to say to church people is there's a lot of prayer that goes into decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of pain and a lot of tears. And so when you receive a message, don't think that was just spur of the moment, just decided all of a sudden, well, we're going to do this. You know, that's not how it goes.
One of the thoughts that went through my mind 1,000 times as a pastor, and I'm embarrassed to say it out loud, but is I would think constantly, do you think I'm an idiot? Do you really think I'm an idiot? So people would question decisions and I'd be like, do you honestly think I haven't thought about that?
Right.
Sometimes I have to stop a program because the person leading it is not competent to lead it. And I'm trying to save their dignity. And I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but we can't do this well because we don't have someone here to lead it well. So I'm saying, hey, we need to do away with this in light of this. But there's not a benefit of the doubt that's given to the pastor. It's like, we want you to tell us exactly why this decision is made. And man, it's just, it'll wear you out emotionally in that setting. Also, we would say this about visiting different churches now and being on this side of it is we didn't realize when we were leading the church what a deep need it is when you go to a church that you love. Like, it is a huge piece of the happiness pie, bigger than we even realized when we were leading it. Because now we see, because of the nature of our job, my job, and because we move around a lot, like, there's this huge hole in our lives that's not, it's felt, it's palpably felt, that we're not consistently growing in deeper connection with others spiritually right now, because we don't have a life that we're ingrained in a community of believers right now. You know, I'm all over the place speaking, and our family's doing that. And that's the call, but it's a huge part of your life. And you're meeting a huge need when you build a church culture that people love to be a part of.
That's encouraging to know that, you know, I think sometimes we think what we're doing, does it really matter?
Oh, it matters.
So is there anything that you would, anything else you would say either to people in the pews about their leaders or to leaders about the people in the pews?
You know, Acts talks about the Bereans who are noble people because they questioned what Paul said and tested against the scriptures. There is something important about church members testing everything the preacher says against scripture. One of the things I don't think people understand, though, is how hurtful it is when a pastor is questioned on one story he told in one sermon, that he's a heretic, or how dare you go out of the bounds of scripture. So if you hear a pastor say something like that, my advice would be, hey, see if he says it again. See if it's part of a larger part of his thinking. Maybe he just didn't say it that well. Maybe he was really tired from the funeral and didn't get a chance to fully bake that idea. It's just the theology police in the congregation. They think they're being the Bereans, but they're really just wearing you out. And so I think that that's something I would want to say to church people, is that give your pastor some grace about his preaching. Like, he's harder on himself than you are on him. Trust me. He needs encouragement.
Yeah, I mean, I would add for the pastor's wife, the thing that with the Glasshouse podcast that we've been doing is having people write in, you know, things that they're experiencing. And even just yesterday, we got an email and the lady said, we got a certain car. Is it too nice though? Because people, you know, people are watching it. And she said, I got my grocery, I do HelloFresh grocery delivery. And people say, you know, why can't my pastor's wife go to the store? And so I just think for the lay people, just to have some grace for, you know, when you have to live your life on display and every decision you make, sometimes you just make decisions that people maybe don't understand. And again, like he was just talking about, or what we were talking about, is that people have family, I'm trying to word this correctly, you know, sometimes in pastoral ministry, you maybe don't make money, but maybe you have family that has given you a gift. I mean, we had this exact same thing happen. What my dad gave me when we were having our fourth child, he had a Suburban that had, you know, 30,000 miles on it. Well, he gave it to us. Well, we got just blasted because the pastor's wife drove a car with fancy new wheels, because my dad has,
the wheels were too shiny.
The wheels were really shiny. Well, my parents are financially, you know, well off. And so my dad's like, you're going to love this because it's got like aloe wheel. I mean, something, I don't even know what that means, but like some sort of like super
cool
shiny wheels.
Why can't pastor's wife have cool
wheels? We got written up in this, this online chat group, you know, that's on anonymous, and you know, pastor's wife driving fancy new wheels. Well, it was like, but you can't respond on there and say that was a gift,
right?
Like, it was a gift and what a blessing it was for us. And so I think sometimes giving your pastor and their family the benefit of the doubt that maybe there's something going on that you are not aware of. Maybe a grandparent just passed away and you inherited some money. So, you know, it is hard. Like, you live this life on display for everyone to judge. And so, I mean, I just think that's the thing that we have learned now being outside of it, is to give some grace for things that maybe we don't understand, and that's okay. We don't have to understand them.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there ways, I get asked this sometimes and I'm not always sure how to answer it, but are there ways that people in the pews can best encourage their pastor and pastor's wife?
I think as a preacher, as a communicator, whether we like it or not, it is a creative act. It's a piece of art. And anytime someone says, I like your art, it matters. you know, an email that says, hey, you told a story that I'm still thinking about. It's really challenged me. It's had an impact on me. I'm working this out. Anytime I got feedback that the thing I spent the most time every week on actually made a difference, it was like wind in my sails. And so for me as a preacher communicator, like I've learned to, if I really want to love a pastor, I'll listen to his sermons and find a way to encourage him in his preaching, because it's a hard thing to do, to be inspiring week after week after week. Every pastor beats himself up over it. Mm-hmm. Not good enough. Not good enough.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Lindley?
I mean, I think thoughtful things are really important. And so, you know, even in the five love languages, one of mine is gifts, which I hate because, you know, that sounds like the shallow person.
It's one of mine too.
Well, that's what I'm like, but gifts are, I mean, one lady gave me, you know, my favorite cherry Dr. Pepper, you know, a 12 pack of that, you know, she left it on my front porch, and, or like we said, Reese's Christmas tree. So it's just little things like that. You know what I mean? Clearly I'm a very healthy person, but you know, it's just the thoughtfulness. And one time when we were in Colorado, Ben announced from this pulpit, because I was supposed to have been there and I had the flu, and probably three different people dropped off soup that day, you know, unexpected. And it was so kind. Nothing super creative, but it was just so kind, because I thought they thought of us and they cared.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's really, really simple things that people could do to let their pastor and pastor's wife know, you know, you are important and you're seen and we appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, let's just close by talking about y'all's podcast. I've mentioned it before. I've loved listening to it. Y'all have done a phenomenal job with it. And I like how it's a little bit different, because you interview people, but then you do sidebars where you two talk about and you relate or resonate with what they're saying. You're digesting it. And so I really like that component of it. We get to know you, but we also get to know your guests.
Yeah.
So what do you want to share with us about your podcast?
Well, one of the things I've learned is it takes a team of people to pull off a great podcast. I mean, honestly, Joy Almond and Angie Elkins listen to that stuff over and over and over and try to figure out how do we edit this to a place where people can hear it well. So we're grateful that we have people help us with it. The second thing, though, is the more frightening a statement is as it comes out of your mouth, the more vulnerable it is. And there's been things on the podcast where I've been like, I cannot believe we're telling the world this right now. And those have been the things that people email, like, thank you for being so like exposed about that.
Yes.
And we're learning that people love raw authenticity, even if it's overstated, to say, okay, maybe I overspoke, but my heart was really wanting to express this. For example, we told a story about an early moment in counseling with me was the counselor looked at me after I had spoken for about 5 minutes. And he just said, I feel lonely with you right now. No man had ever said that to me. And he said, I feel like you're using a lot of words, but you're really hiding. And I'm learning more and more that I've gotten really good at hiding. I can give you a sermonic answer to a question and not say a single thing about how I'm really experiencing that right now.
Yeah.
And we're learning on The Glass House. It was really Lindley's idea of the title of like, how do we talk about what it's like to live in a glass house, where a lot of pastors and wives have learned how to hide and they are extremely lonely and feeling like their lives are quiet desperation. How do we get that out there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what the world does right now currently with social media is highlight the successes of everyone.
That's right.
And I mean, I kind of like that this is highlighting the failures, and not failures in, it's failures in worldly eyes. I mean, like the Lord is teaching us all these lessons. And so I think it's really fun to expose that to the world and just say, you know, you're not forgotten because you're going through a hard season.
Yeah.
And we had a lady just this week say she was so thankful to hear us say that we were angry, because, you know, we're supposed to not ever be angry, or that's what the world says. And yet really anger is passion in the healthiest form. And so if we can, you know, get that into the right lane, that's a really good thing. Mm-hmm. So I just loved being really, I'm trying to think of the right word, just vulnerable and authentic, and letting people know that other people out there are feeling these ways. Not everybody is this success story, you know, influencer on Instagram that we all want to be kind of thing. Some mm-hmm. of us are just normal, trying to go through our days. And like I said earlier, just trying to even wrestle with the fact that, like, is being a stay-at-home mom enough?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just everyday questions, not these big overarching questions.
I've always loved C.S. Lewis on friendship when he says, friendship is born in the moment when one person says to another, what, you too? I thought I was the only one.
Yeah.
And I think what's been fun about the Glass House is the friendships that, like, with you and Kyle, like, if we ever get to hang out, we're going to have the best time.
Yeah.
Because we've had conversations that are, like, meaningful. Mm-hmm. And it's fun on the Glass House. Like, I look forward to the conversation in and of itself, let alone the release of it.
Yeah.
So one last thing we would say, the conversation is the relationship. We've learned that over the years of marriage. The quality of the conversation you have with a person is the quality of the relationship. And so as we measure relationships in the church, it's not enough to say, I've got 1,000 people coming on the weekend. What is the quality of the conversations you're having with those people? That is the measure.
That's really good. That's really good. And I think that y'all are in a perfect spot to do this podcast because, as Lindley said, or somebody said earlier, you're not in a specific church now, mm-hmm. leading. So you have the opportunity to say some of the things that we who are in our churches might not be able to say, and you're inviting us to say them. And I think it's the perfect spot. And I'm thankful you're using that spot to minister to people like me.
I love to be able to represent. That's what I said in the very first episode, represent the underrepresented and not stir the pot in it. I'm not saying that in the way that people think, but stir the pot a little bit. And like, this is what's really going on and other people need to know. And so even how it's marketed towards pastors and pastors' wives, but we've had a lot of church people who are listening and saying, we're so thankful to know what maybe our pastor and pastor's wife is feeling. Because somebody's, you know, acknowledging that it's not going as great maybe for them as we think it is.
And not only that, if pastors struggle with shame, maybe I'm a little bit more normal than I thought.
Yes.
And I think people are realizing that if these celebrated figures struggle with these emotions, it's okay for me to struggle too.
Well, I love you guys. We want to hang out with y'all if we ever come to Nashville. But I'm just so thankful for what you're doing, how you're utilizing the spot God's placed you in. And I'm going to link to y'all's podcast. So everybody listening, you need to immediately jump over and start. Awesome. If you haven't listened, start at episode 1. It's phenomenal. Thank y'all for joining me today.
Thanks for
You're welcome.
Us.
And talk to Kyle. You must come to Nashville.
Yeah.
When's it going to happen? On the air right now. Give me a date.
I know you are going to want to immediately jump over to the Mandrels podcast, The Glass House. So I've linked to it for you in the show notes. And I'm going to be sharing soon, right here on my podcast, the episode where my husband and I joined them on The Glass House. So look for that soon. Friends, thanks so much for listening to By Faith. Join me next week as I talk with Nana Dolce for another how-to episode. Nana joins me to teach us how to prepare a Bible study talk. And of course, we end up talking about so much more, like the gift of teaching, how we can grow our Bible study skills, and motivations behind teaching. I can't wait to share this with you. And until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.